Yesterday, we lost one of the most important producers in the history of American theater. Joseph Papp died of prostate cancer at the age of 70. Tonight, the lights on Broadway will dim in his memory. But he devoted most of his life to theater off-Broadway. His New York Shakespeare Festival presented free Shakespeare in Central Park. Off-Broadway, Papp developed A Chorus Line and Hair, which went on to become huge Broadway hits. He used the profits to support his more experimental productions. Papp nurtured the talents of playwrights like David Mamet, John Gare, George C. Wolfe, Wallace Shawn, and David Rabe. The plays he produced also helped launch the careers of actors like George C. Scott, Kevin Kline, Meryl Streep, Raul Julia, and James Earl Jones. When Papp stepped down as director of the Shakespeare Festival in September, New York Times theater critic Frank Rich wrote that he left the New York theater an almost completely different place than he found it. Today we remember Papp with an excerpt of a 1987 Fresh Air interview. Although Papp has always been associated with Shakespeare, English was his second language. He grew up speaking Yiddish. That surprised me, but he saw a connection.
You know how melodic Yiddish is? Really,
yes,
as
I
a
do,
language.
Yeah.
And the key to Shakespeare is the melody. The ear is the key to it. But I didn't immediately go from Yiddish to Shakespeare. It's just that I had a teacher, naturally. You get the right teacher who is committed to Shakespeare and loves Shakespeare. And it was just in the junior high school. I sort of stumbled on Julius Caesar. And the words sounded so wonderful, particularly Mark Antony. And I began to memorize just the speeches.
Did you get to the theater much?
No, I didn't know the theater existed.
How'd you find out about it?
Well, later on, they took a bunch of us to, when I was in high school, to see John Gielgud's Hamlet. And that was the first time I went to the theater.
And you loved it?
No, I didn't. I thought he spoke in a phony fashion. I said, why couldn't he speak more naturally? You know, he had a tremolo in his voice. He's become a gorgeous actor now. But when he was young, when I was first exposed to it, the speech sounded very strange. It was British, you know. But it was very, you know, it was, oh, that this too solid flesh would melt. Now, you know, to a kid from Brooklyn and coming from where people spoke in ordinary ways, it was too high class. But I did kind of enjoy the show. But the speech to me, I said, I felt was too artificial. And so, I mean, later on, I became involved with that whole concept of not having artificial British speech, but having good American speech. Not the speech I had at the time, because that was good Brooklyn speech, and it would hardly be acceptable on any stage, any time. But I prefer good American actors acting Shakespeare. I think they have the proper vitality, the proper energy, and in a certain sense, with the exception of the great, great British actors, are closer to Shakespeare than a lot of the Shakespeare I've just come back from London that I've seen.
Well, in the late 50s, you really made headlines in New York for bringing the free Shakespeare to Central Park.
I started with this notion of wanting to bring Shakespeare to the people without charge and play in the city's parks, playgrounds, deal with the Board of Education. It was to bring the things that I loved to other people. And I felt Shakespeare was understandable. I felt he'd been taken over too much by the academics, and they were controlling him, and he was being presented in a way that would turn a lot of people off. And so I made it sort of my commitment, and I've been with this for 34 years now, to bring the Shakespeare and to develop American actors to act the works of Shakespeare with the right emotionality, the right speech, clarity, but Americans. And not in a nationalistic way, but just clear, good American speech. The way I'm speaking to you now, I consider that fair American speech. There are people that speak it much better. But without any localisms in the speech, but without removing certain accents. I mean, I've had Raul Julia play all major parts. He's a Hispanic actor, and I don't want to ruin his marvelous accent. But he's clear in his speech. You understand every word. He has a marvelous ear. And then there's James Earl Jones, also a black actor. Now, he's worried about losing his negritude, he used to say to me. I said, you're not losing your negritude at all. Just go, just keep what you have. It's just that the clarity was important, the final consonant endings of words. And there's nobody clearer. He has one of the greatest speaking voices. And so does Raoul. Now, those are two prime examples of American speech. But there are certain unpleasant sounds in American speech. You can't talk this way. And when you can't say, now is the winter of our discontent. You have to say, now is the winter. You have to say the. You can't say duh. You can if you want to, but it won't sound very good. So you don't want affected speech. You want normal, clear speech and not sloppy speech. And when I say localisms, I'm not talking about accents, because there's a southern accent, and I've heard a beautiful Romeo and Juliet played with a southern speech, very soft, what light through yonder window breaks. Sounds quite beautiful. But the speech was good. The enunciation was good.
You've had shows that you nurtured in a nonprofit setting, and then they moved on to Broadway. But I don't think you've ever really tried to just move your operation altogether to Broadway.
There's no way to do that.
Yeah. I don't know. Did you ever want to do that?
I couldn't do that, because there's no way to know what play is going to succeed and what is not going to succeed. Broadway is a freelance operation. It's a commercial operation. If I have something that seems to attract a lot of attention, gets good notices, and people want to see it, I have to be very careful, because some of the best plays I do never go to Broadway. Because they're too good.
Well, you know, some people have like Broadway in their blood, and no matter what they think of Broadway, they have to be on Broadway.
No.
There's a whole mythology. Or was that mythology ever in your system about Broadway?
Never, and still not. In fact, I really don't like Broadway that much, because most of it is vulgar. I mean, most of the things that are put on stage. I mean, I produce plays, and you'll find I always have one standard of work. I would do the same thing downtown at my small theaters. I have five small theaters in one building in Greenwich Village, as I would do on Broadway or in the park. There's not a double standard. I say, well, I'm going to do this in a commercial way. I don't know what that means. I mean, we either do it well or we don't do it well.
One of the things you've really done is find black, Hispanic, and women playwrights whose work wasn't getting performed to a large public. It seems to me you've probably had to travel to really small theaters and performance spaces and out-of-the-way places to discover people. How do you do it? Do you have a routine for doing that?
No, it's not a routine exactly. Once you begin to operate in the proper way, you begin to generate a particular kind of work. You begin to attract people. I mean, black writers who thought they would never could be produced would come to me because they know that they have a chance. Black actors, Hispanic actors, they know we're not going to, you know, twit them around and pretend and cast in any kind of, symbolic manner, that we give parts to good actors. And I don't do it because I'm a liberal, because I'm not. I do it because I think it's the right thing and get the best actors, and I think New York is a multiracial community and should be represented on the stage that way.
What did you mean by this, I'm not a liberal?
Well, I don't like the word liberal. To me has certain connotations, which I don't identify with. I feel I'm more radical than I am liberal, that I believe in liberalism. I mean, believe in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. But I take stronger stands on things than just talking about it a lot, right? So, and I do them. It's not a theory to me. The Constitution is not a theory to me, nor the Bill of Rights, or the theater itself and what it's supposed to do in a society. It has to have impact and meaning. It has to deal with social issues. The people themselves that are in it have to be part of this. The fabric of a theater has to represent the entire fabric of our society. And if you're going to go into the schools where you have black and Hispanic and Asian students, you're not going to bring in an all-white company and insult these people. And so that takes doing, and you have to train people, you work with people. It's not easy. There are some black actors that are just extraordinary and as good as any white actor. A lot of black actors and Hispanic actors haven't had an opportunity to be in theater and to work, and you have to spend a lot more time working with some of these people. The same is true in the general situation. People who have not been in the picture, not because of themselves, but because of the way things work out, you have to make an extra effort in those areas, and we make that effort because it's my responsibility, I feel. And I assume that responsibility.
You've discovered and helped nurture the careers of a lot of now well-known actors.
Absolutely, and we'll continue to do that.
Yeah. Do you usually see something right away in them?
Yeah, certainly see something right away. That's why you're spending time with these people. Otherwise, you wouldn't cast them if you didn't see something right away. Otherwise, you wouldn't be working with this writer unless you saw something right away. You can tell quite clearly from the very beginning if someone is talented. Some people manage to continue to write, and some, if talking about writers, for example, Some don't. I mean, some people win the Pulitzer Prize and then they never write another play. We've had two of those people. We had Charles Gaudin, Chuck Gaudin, wrote a play, a beautiful play, marvelous writer, No Place to Be Somebody, the first black writer to win a Pulitzer. And then we had Jason Miller, Jack Miller, who wrote that championship season, hasn't written a play. But I knew they were both talented writers and also actors. You can see in 5 seconds.
Theater impresario Joseph Papp died yesterday in New York at the age of 70. Our interview was recorded in 1987. This is Fresh Air.